This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm Ridhima Talwani, a journalist here at Financial Standard. AI was one of the hottest trades of 2025. With money rushing in, excitement building fast, and investors scrambling for exposure in companies which could potentially change the way our world works. But along with that excitement, one word increasingly crept into the conversations, the AI bubble. And no one seems quite sure who or what might pop it. In August, Sam Altman, the chief executive of OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, said, and I quote, "I do think some investors are likely to lose a lot of money, and I don't want to minimize that. That sucks." So the big question is this. Should you be in the camp of investors piling into the AI boom or stand on the sides of the skeptics? To help us unpack this, I'm joined by Kieran Moore, portfolio manager at Munro Partners. Welcome, Kieran.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Kieran, where does Munro Partners stand on the AI thematic, and how are you positioning for the trade in the coming years?
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for having us this morning. So look, we effectively don't think it's a bubble. So we think AI is one of the biggest structural thematics to effectively change the world. And we think it's going to change a lot of consumers and businesses over the medium term and over the many years to come. So we think there's going to be lots of different ways to integrate AI into consumer lifestyles and consumer everyday things over the years to come, and again in lots of businesses around the planet. So we certainly don't think it's a bubble, and we think there's lots to go for here. So look, what we do is our focus really as growth investors has always been to invest in what we call the enablers of these big structural thematics. So that is the companies that we think are the critical shovels in the boom, the companies that are enabling big structural changes to happen, and in this case, enabling AI to happen. Mm-hmm. And so that includes a lot of different companies from all around the world, but effectively, it includes a lot of semiconductor companies that are responsible for helping build out the data center. It includes a lot of companies that bring power to the data center. It includes a lot of companies that have networking technology and ensure those chips that can operate and communicate at very fast speeds, just to name a few opportunities. And so at the moment, really, the situation is that we have a lot of demand for compute and not enough supply. And so that makes for a great investment horizon as equity investors for us. But the fact that demand outweighs supply means that this fundamental investment opportunity and this big structural thematic, which is AI, we think can continue for many years to come into the future and certainly beyond 2026.
Do you think the macroeconomic environment that we have will be supportive of the money flowing into this trade?
Yeah, so we've certainly seen a lot of supportive environment, particularly in the US. So if you think back to last year in 2025, we saw lots of announcements and lots of support from the US administration, so from the Trump administration, towards things like AI, mm-hmm. to make sure that America in particular is a leader in the race here for developing and harnessing AI technology and allowing America to be effectively the center of the AI development and the center of the tech development. So we've certainly seen a lot of fiscal support, in particular in the US in 2025, and we expect that to continue as we go forward in years to come. I think other examples here are clearly the Chinese want to support their own industries from an AI point of view. And we've also seen places even in the Middle East that are promoting the use and development of AI. We've seen some big announcements in Saudi Arabia over the last 12 months as well. So certainly lots of fiscal support and lots of government support from countries around the world. And we certainly think that will continue over the medium term.
You talked about Chinese companies, and we had the major DeepSeek moment last year, which was talked about a lot. So how do you think geopolitics will sort of shape where the best value companies come out of?
Yeah, so ultimately, it's the geopolitical spectrum at the moment. It really, when we think about it in the context of AI, we think about it from a position of who's going to allow these companies to progress and develop in terms of artificial intelligence. So I talked at the start about things like when we're building out compute infrastructure, we need things like power. We need things like networking, equipment and capabilities. We obviously need the best semiconductors in the world to be able to do this sort of thing. And so it's really the policy support for those particular industries and those particular areas that we need to effectively enable those industries to grow and enable those industries to develop and really harness things like capitalism to enable AI to grow and develop and turn into all those lots of different consumer and business applications that we think are coming in the medium term.
Let's talk a little bit more about the valuation concerns, right? Because there's a lot of investor capital flowing into these big tech companies, and there's a lot of exuberance right now, which is inflating the share prices of these companies. Do you feel comfortable with the valuation levels that these AI stocks have currently?
Yeah, so it's a good question. And look, we do actually. We do feel comfortable with the valuations where they are today. So look, a lot of market participants and a lot of market commentators have been comparing what we've seen over the last year and couple of years really back to the late 1990s and early 2000s when we saw the big tech internet bubble. So we think the environment today from a valuation perspective, we feel it's very, very different to the late 90s, early 2000s. So if you look at some of the biggest companies today that are at the forefront of the AI revolution, so, you know, that's companies like NVIDIA, for example, that provides that really advanced GPU technology or those really advanced semiconductors. NVIDIA today on a price to earnings ratio, on a PE multiple basis, of evaluation basis, you know, it's just above where the US S&P 500 sits today. So when you look 12 months forward at the earnings that the market thinks NVIDIA is going to produce, it values the company on about a 24 times PE multiple. The US S&P is a bit over 21 today as we sit here. So look, we don't think that multiple relative to the earnings growth that we think NVIDIA can deliver is excessive by any stretch of the imagination. Another good example is TSMC, which is Taiwan Semi, that is responsible for effectively making or producing these chips. And that company, you know, sits or trades on a PE multiple today of just under the S&P 500. Yet its revenues are growing, expected to grow, and the company's guided them to grow at roughly 30% per annum this year. So what you're seeing is very, very strong growth from a lot of these businesses, but the valuations themselves and the PE multiples, you know, aren't very high. You know, if you think back to the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, in 1999, I think it was, the NASDAQ 100 went up over 100% for the calendar year. In 2025, that equivalent number was roughly mid-teens. So we certainly don't think the market and valuations themselves are sort of ahead of the opportunity that we see here today. So we certainly don't think it's a valuation bubble. And the opportunity, therefore, is not fully reflected in the stock values today, we don't think.
Okay, let's talk about the other big concern that these AI companies have, right? OpenAI recently said that it would start showing ads on ChatGPT for some US users, and it wants to expand that to a lot of users as well in an effort to ramp up and generate revenue. So the massive CapEx expenditure that is going into the AI trade, you know, into the infrastructure, into the data centers,
yep.
But there are concerns if the revenue would scale up at the same level. What are your expectations in terms of the revenue in the coming years?
Yeah, so we think the revenue will scale up. We think consumers and businesses will use these technologies. And I think we're starting to see that really already. We're starting to see that consumers and businesses all around the world are adopting these technologies and getting some value for them. So the way we track where we are now to ultimately a revenue generation point is really how many people are actually using the technology and how many of these different applications are being developed. So, you know, if you think about the basic metrics that we're sort of looking at there, it's OpenAI is up over 800 million monthly active users. There's almost 400 million active users at Google Gemini, which is rapidly developed in its ability to compete now with OpenAI and progress its technology forward. So we're still seeing very, very strong use case at the end of the chain here, the investment chain. So that does give us comfort. And we certainly think that these technologies can and will generate significant revenue going forward into the future. One point you did raise, though, was just the big CapEx dollars that we're putting to work. And I think what gives us comfort that money is being put to work and it's not, you know, excessive amounts of money here is that all that money that's being put to work in these data centers and these towards these semiconductors and networking equipment, et cetera, that's a lot of that CapEx is coming from the free cash generation of some of the biggest businesses on the planet, right? So we've got companies like Meta that operates with a roughly 50% margin in its core advertising platform that it's able to generate cash from and put that cash to work. We've got obviously companies like Alphabet that has a very dominant position in things like search, which generates a lot of cash. Amazon, Microsoft, you know, even Apple as well has a big cash balance. So a lot of this CapEx is actually coming out of some of these super cash generative businesses at the end of the day, which certainly gives us comfort around some of the risks that you pointed out with AI. But overall, I think when you look forward, you've really got to focus in on, are these technologies, are these applications that we're developing or that are being developed being used by consumers? And we certainly think they are so far.
You mentioned the efficiency that can be unlocked by AI being deployed by businesses, right?
Yep.
And you said you're seeing that in real time. Can you give us some examples of what you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, we're a shareholder in a business called Axon in the US. So this is effectively a public safety company. It makes the body cams that police officers wear. It also makes the taser that the police officers carry. And it sells these products all around the world to police departments and state and local government enterprises. So what Axon has been able to do is they've developed what they call an AI bundle. So the way Axon charges for all those technologies, the body cam that the police officer wears and the taser, they charge for it through a bundle, so a subscription mm-hmm. service. They've developed an AI bundle. So what that means, and maybe I'll just take a minute to explain it,
yeah.
is that if a police officer is wearing the Axon body cam, that body cam is capturing a lot of data. Mm-hmm. Visual data and audio data all through that officer's shift. And so that data, Axon's developed an AI-driven feature to be able to convert that data into an automated police report at the end of the day and have that body cam act almost in a virtual assistant type way for the officer when they're out on their shift.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think in the US, if you think what officers are doing day in, day out, a big part of what they do, the company tells us that they spend roughly 1 to 2 hours a day writing these police reports. And so this AI bundle, this AI plan that Axon's been able to develop can effectively help reduce the amount of time that officers spend writing these police reports because it can potentially be enhanced through the use of AI. So that's an example where Axon's able to charge and grow its business from deploying AI solutions mm-hmm. right now today. And look, that's one example in the security, in a security setting, in a public safety setting, that is, you know, totally different to what most people might think of when they think about how is AI being deployed in the world today.
So let's drill more into the stock specifics. Where in the value chain do you see value? Like, what stocks specifically are you looking for when you want to invest in the trade?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So come right back to what I said at the start, which is our focus is always or has always been to invest in the enablers of these big technology shifts.
Right.
So
yep.
think about, you know, when we're in the gold rush and we've got the shovels in the boom, so to speak. So investing in, from our point of view, we're investing in the companies that enable these big structural changes like AI to play out. And so that obviously includes companies in the semiconductor supply chain, obviously companies like NVIDIA and TSMC that I mentioned. Broadcom is also a very, very relevant player here in this space. But it goes beyond that. So again, what we think about is we've got to think about, you know, where this compute infrastructure is being spent and where this compute infrastructure is being developed from a holistic point of view. And so that's at the data center, right? So we've got to think about the networking companies that help all these semiconductors effectively communicate with each other in a very, very low latency way. So that's companies like, for example, Ciena in the US, which is a networking company that has recently won some big contracts with Meta,
mm-hmm.
but it's also companies that help build out the data center. So companies like, for example, Comfort Systems, which we own across our portfolios, which is effectively a contractor. And so when you're thinking about building out data center infrastructure, what you need to do that is mechanical engineers and electrical engineers to help effectively produce these big data centers to house the chips. And there's a real demand shortage, a supply shortage of contractors and contracting ability in the US. And so a company like Comfort Systems, for example, can play into that and therefore grow its earnings in a really meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
The last opportunity that I'd call out, really, and we've seen some developments on this front over the last week or so, is around powering the data center. So clearly, data center infrastructure with the amount of compute they're generating are going to consume a lot more power, mm-hmm. and they are consuming a lot more power. So we've seen Meta partner with Constellation Energy from a nuclear power supplier point of view. We've seen Microsoft do the same thing. And then just last week, Meta again announced further partnerships and further developments in providing or agreeing to pay for nuclear power to support their data center build out. So there's lots of opportunities to go for here from an enabler point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And then further down the track, you know, I talked about that Axon example. There's going to be lots of investment opportunities more on the what we call or what we might call the front end of AI, where we see all the applications and see what consumers are using and businesses are using.
Mm-hmm.
Applications like that Axon example.
Let's also talk about Alphabet a little bit. It was one of the largest contributors for Monroe's global growth fund in the quarter ending December 2025. What are your expectations from the stock in 2026, and also the Gemini 3 model that was released by Google?
Yeah, so this is a big development. So Google initially, if you wind the clock back a couple of years ago, Google was perceived to be a loser from AI. That mm-hmm. is, there was a narrative out there that search was going to be disrupted because mm-hmm. we were going to search less on Google and use more tools like ChatGPT. And that's probably the case, but search, in our view, won't go away. And so Google's effectively been able to reposition themselves as really a winner now from artificial intelligence. And look, that's always been our expectation that they would be able to do that. It's just come about probably a lot quicker than the market expected. And so what's happened here? So Google for a long time has been investing in a custom silicon program. So this is a program to develop their own in-house semiconductor chips.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done that with a company called Broadcom. And that program's been going now for about 10 years since 2015. What Google has been able to do is leverage that custom program, that program of building their own semiconductors for their own purpose, and using that custom program to help power Gemini along with NVIDIA product as well. So Gemini is now, or late last year, it proved itself to be, you know, the best performing model when it was released. So Google has clearly turned the narrative here that they're potentially an AI loser into an AI winner. Now, what's happened, and the reason why I talk about that custom semiconductor program, is that other companies are now looking at Google and trying to emulate that success. So Meta wants to build their own custom program. OpenAI is potentially going to commit in a big way to a custom program going forward. ByteDance in China as well wants to do their own custom program. So we've seen the success that Google's had. And other companies are trying to emulate that. In terms of what this success means for 2026, we think Google is going to continue to grow its earnings in a meaningful way. So when you think about the success of Gemini, what that means is that it's going to enable more and more success and more growth for Google Cloud. And we expect some very, very strong revenue growth numbers for Google Cloud this year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the flip side of that is that we expect search growth, which everyone thought was going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
We expect search growth to continue to be quite resilient in 2026, which drives that really nice healthy margin as well. So we expect Google to again grow its earnings in a strong way in 2026. And as we hope over the medium term, we hope the shares obviously follow those earnings.
And are there any risks you're accounting for in terms of the trade?
The AI trade more broadly? Yeah. So the big risk that we see, and look, this fundamental to our belief is that we think this is several years away, but clearly at some point we're going to probably get to a position where we've built enough compute infrastructure to cater to what we as a society and consumers and businesses are using all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to get to a point where we've built enough data center infrastructure, and it will be more, you know, technology driven from that point on. So less hardware, if you like. And so that's something that we think is out there in the medium to long term, but not something that we think is a risk right here today.
Mm-hmm.
It's something we're conscious of. The other thing is, really, as I sort of mentioned with Google, is we're aware of potentially disruption risks out there in the market. We've certainly seen some potential disruption risk around traditional vertical software companies in 2025. Mm-hmm. So these are software companies that you might pay a subscription for as mm-hmm. a business or an individual. And in theory, with things like open source AI, you can potentially create your own version of that vertical software. So you don't need to pay for that subscription anymore. So mm-hmm. we've certainly seen the market very much focused on this software disruption risk as well. So they're the two that I'd call out as potential, you know, risks coming out of this big opportunity.
And finally, on a personal note, is there a way you use AI in work or otherwise that's changed how you operate day to day?
Yeah, great question. So look, I look at stocks every single day. I love to investigate new businesses. And typically where I start my research is through one of these large language models. So mm-hmm. When I come across a new investment opportunity or a new thematic or a new concept for investment dollars, I'll always start my research at the moment with things like Perplexity. I'll start it with Google Gemini. I'll start it with ChatGPT. So that's a great tool. And the other area where we are finding a lot of benefit as an equity manager is that, you know, we do a lot of work in spreadsheets modeling out the earnings of these businesses that we invest in. We can harness the power of AI to effectively help us with a lot of that grunt work in terms of, you know, filling out those historical financials and updating the quarters and things like that. So certainly a lot of efficiencies that we think we can generate out of the use of AI.
That was a great conversation. Thank you so much, Kieran, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.